Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, good morning. It's the 1st of July, 2007. It's 0820 Greenwich Mean Time. And this is Solder Smoke 65 from London, still from London. Today, I have to start out by wishing everybody a happy Alexanderson Day. Today is the day for the annual transmission with the Alexanderson alternator on VLF, 17.2 kilohertz. That's kilohertz, not megahertz, 17.2 kilohertz. So you guys are going to have to tune way down to the low part of the bands. It's taking place today at 0900 UTC. And be repeated at 1300 UTC today. So for you early listeners, there's still a chance to tune in at least for the second transmission at 17.2 kilohertz. Always a very interesting event. And let's see. There will also be activity on amateur radio frequencies using the call sign SK6SAQ. And you can just... I guess you could find it. There's websites on this. If you just do a search on Alexanderson Day or Grimetown Radio SAQ transmission, you'll find out a lot more about this. Thanks to Lars Calland, SM6NM, for sending us the information on this important and interesting annual event, the Alexanderson alternator. If you guys don't know what it is, it's imagine trying to build a an RF transmitter. Back in the days when the only things you had available were kind of alternators, you had spark, but I guess to get a real CW signal, imagine just running an alternator at RF frequencies, or at low RF frequencies anyway, and that's what they did. And it was an important advance. I think it was an alternator-like device that allowed for the some of the early phone transmissions. But certainly a tough way to get a continuous wave versus a damped wave, and good thing we developed crystal oscillators using Hartley and Colpitt circuits, or else we'd all be stuck with truly enormous alternators in the backyard whining away. I think that would really cause trouble with the neighbors. Let's see. We have a few unusual things on the show today, starting out with Alexanderson Day. I'm going to move now to a bit of inspiration here. It seems that in recent weeks, just about every time I sit down and start to think about what we're going to talk about here on Solder Smoke, a bit of inspiration comes my way. And you could tell we're a little bit later in the morning. The phone is ringing here. Anyway, this week's bit of inspiration comes to us from the pages of QST Magazine, specifically from the Short Takes column of Steve Ford, WB8IMY, the QST's editor. I've been in contact with Steve on and off over the years regarding different articles that I wrote for the magazine. It's always been a great pleasure to work with him and the guys at QST, and I've always really enjoyed the articles that Steve himself has put into the magazine. I like the eclectic technology column. I really enjoyed his satellite amateur satellite columns. I think Steve would be the first to admit that most of his articles are not really in the kind of component level home brewing area that most of us are involved in. He's been sort of involved at the higher end of the technology scale, and engaged in especially with regards to his eclectic technology column, some of the real high end and advanced stuff, and not so much down at the direct conversion receiver QRP transmitter end of the technology scale. But gentlemen, I think we got them now. Because if you look at page 49 of QST Magazine, the July 2007 edition, there's an article there by Steve about his construction of a Hendrix QRP Kits DC-40 transceiver. Like all of Steve's articles, it's very well done, and he does a great job at giving the kind of the atmosphere of the construction project. He starts out by explaining that during Christmas 2006, his wife and daughter were heading out to the West Coast for a family visit, and that he had been given the opportunity to opt out of this particular trip. For a variety of reasons, Steve decided to stay home with his cat and with his soldering iron. Good choice, Steve. We've all been there. He begins his description of the construction by just giving us a little bit of the atmosphere. It says here, an afternoon of jazz and solder fumes, indeed. Snowflakes swirled out of a gray New England sky as I slipped on a John Coltrane CD into the station computer and sat down to the task at hand. The task at hand, gentlemen, was a DC-40 from Hendrix Kits. He describes the packaging of the kit, the really excellent manual that comes with it. Then he says this, "You will find that you have to wind several toroid inductors. Winding is tedious, but the instructions tell you exactly how to go about it. I adopted a Zen attitude of becoming one with the toroid, counting each turn in a kind of meditative mantra as it passed through the center of the core." He's definitely getting into the spirit of things here, guys, although I don't think many of us have described it as Zen-like, but, well, there'll be some more about Zen as we go further on in the show today. You'll see. All right, he describes the moment of truth, the smoke test. Here it goes. In a subparagraph entitled, "It's Alive," he says, "My pulse raced as I connected the DC-40 to my 40-meter inverted V antenna. I plugged in a set of iPod-style earbuds into the headphone jack, held my breath, and pushed the rocker switch on my DC power supply." Can't read too much more here, guys, because I guess I'm bordering on the limits of fair use here, but I don't think Steve would mind if I just shared with you the words that he used to describe the excitement of that moment. And again, everyone listening to the show has been there. Quote, "Let me tell you, there is nothing, nothing in this life that compares to the feeling you get when you hear signals pouring forth from a radio you've built yourself." Indeed, indeed, Steve. Yes, that's right. And guys, I think we're going to see many more articles about solder smoke being generated at the WB8 IMY QDH. I think it's a great thing. We're always happy every time we bring another radio amateur into the solder smoke, and I think Steve is there. So three cheers for Steve Ford for a very nice article and for building the Hendrix QRP kits. Three cheers for the Hendrix QRP kits, folks, too. And thanks for a good article. Thanks to you, Doug, KI6DS. For your role in that, and we hope we're going to see more of these kind of component level direct conversion, perhaps even double sideband articles coming from the typewriter of WB8IMY. All right, we also have got an inspirational message from someone who had been to the Friedrichshafen Amateur Funkenmessen Hamfest or Radio Rally, the big European ham fest held in Germany, and we got a nice email report sent in by Nick 2E0VOW of Swindon, England, and he went over there with the XYL and described how he dropped her off so that she could do some painting further down the coast of the Bodensee, Lake Constance. Beautiful area. I've driven through there. really nice, nice part of Germany. This was Nick's very first radio rally, so he said he had no idea what to expect. He went in and started making his way through the stalls. I think you guys will know what I say. We know what I mean when I say that the first radio rally could be a rather shocking and disorienting experience. And I get a sense of that in reading Nick's description of the event. I wandered around the halls, buying as few and as small things as possible, because we had to fit our already full motorbike luggage, and we had to fit it all into our already filled motorbike luggage and ride about 1,000 miles back to Swindon with it. Unfortunately, I seem to have forgotten this at some point and purchased a cheaper version of a telescopic mask, 12.5 meters when erected, and an oscilloscope tube. I also purchased valve sockets, large value electrolytics, switches, digital panel meters, and various other useful and cheap items for my shack. I had written a shopping list before I went, but unfortunately could find very little of what I wanted. I made up for this by finding other interesting things and useful items, such as cheap PL259 plugs, large 7-segment LEDs for 20 cents, a small but stacked valve chassis, a huge tuning knob, very powerful laser LEDs, and other goodies. Welcome to the land of ham fests, Nick. That's exactly what almost all of us buy when we go to these events. So you're definitely in the proper swing of things there. It says here, some of the stalls were almost beautiful in their arrangement and the amount of care and design involved. I saw a great robot and electronic display, and alternatively, some were bordering on the comical with the way everything was just thrown onto the tables and the floor. Yeah, the floor. That's where the important stuff is. And I don't know if I mentioned this on Solder Smoke before, but I had a friend back in Virginia who came up with the idea that and said that everybody going to ham fests or radio rallies should be required to wear their kind of call sign name tags, not on the front of their shirts or even on their ham radio baseball hats, but instead the call signs and names should be affixed to the toes of their shoes, because that's where everybody's looking as they go through the ham fest. I thought that was a good idea, because I've been to ham fest, and as I came out I said, did I actually see anybody there, or was it just, you know, the bunch of boxes on the floor and shoes stuck in amongst them. So Nick has definitely got the sense of the ham fest there. Let's see what else. He said that it worked out very well, and he said that it says here the language of the rally was sort of a mixture of German and English with a bit of gesticulation here and there. But I could see no real evidence of any kind of problems in the language area. That's encouraging, and frankly, to be expected. You know, yeah, to a certain extent, we all speak the same kind of weird, geeky, technical language here. So I'm sure that wasn't a problem there. Nick points out. Next day, we visited the Zeppelin airship and also the Dornier aircraft museums. Tasty. Indeed, I think that sounds like a really excellent place to visit. And thanks again to Nick 2E0VOW from Swindon, England, for sending in a very nice report. Thanks a lot, Nick. All right, let's see. We're almost kind of in a borderline mailbag here situation here, guys. But I just wanted to mention one other kind of science-related thing here. When on one of the shows where Mike and I, as we were wont to do, kind of wandered into the field of astronomy and space exploration, Mike mentioned a 17th-century scientist named Olli Rømer. He was Danish. And Mr. Rømer, I think in 1674, made some observations of the planet Jupiter, and specifically its moon, Io, that allowed him to make some calculations related to the speed of light, and a topic that's of course of interest to radio amateurs, seeing as how we're using it every time we key the mic or press the key or turn on the lights in a shack for that matter. But I remember Mike was amazed by the fact that in 1674 Mr. Romer, just by using these observations of Jupiter, was able to make some calculations. I don't think he was actually able to calculate the speed, but he was able to determine was how long it took the light to get from Jupiter to the Earth. And I forget what the calculation was, but he made the calculation for how much time it took, and he based this on the fact that at certain points of the year, the orbit of Io, the moon Io, appeared to be longer, and other times during the year it appeared to be shorter. And he realized this, of course, was because we were either closer to or moving closer to or further away or moving further away from Jupiter as the two planets went through their orbits. He didn't know the size of the orbits, so all he could calculate was the amount of time that it took light to get from Jupiter to Earth, which was, let's face it, that's a pretty good calculation, especially for 1674. For some reason I recalled this conversation with Mike, and it caused me to dig a little deeper, and as we do these days, of course, the first place I went was the Wikipedia. And they talked about Romer's discoveries and inventions, but they also described somebody who actually followed up, not really followed up on his work, but did some additional work in the same field, and was able to actually come up with a pretty good calculation of the speed of light. This was the 19th century scientists. And what a great name. I mean, if you're going to be a scientist working on the speed of light, this is the kind of name that you really need. Hippolyte Fitzhugh. Hippolyte Fitzhugh. I think I'm pronouncing that correct. But even if I'm not, the correct pronunciation is probably equally cool. Hippolyte was trying to figure out a way to calculate the speed of light. And now he's working, I think, in something like around 1875 or so. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but in that area. And he came up with what I think today would be regarded as a really very neat hack. I mean, this is the kind of thing that would make it into Makezine or Slashdot or one of those kind of clever hack-related websites. It would certainly get mentioned here on Solder Smoke. What he did was he set up on two mountaintops. I think the mountaintops were about 10 kilometers away. And he set up big mirrors on the mountaintop so that he could take sunlight from the mountaintop where he was stationed, bounce it off the mirror at the on the opposite mountaintop, and have that sunbeam then come back to him. So imagine one big mirror sort of serving as the source of the sunlight, and then a reflector mirror aimed so that the burst of sunlight would come back to the source mirror. Now, he knew the distance that the light was traveling, but he had to come up with a device that would allow him to measure the speed. And I think this is where the ingenious part comes in. He worked up a big wheel with kind of cogs or gaps in it, and he put the wheel in front. He put the wheel between the two mirrors. So you got the sunlight coming in from above, and then the reflected sunlight. The only way it could get to the distant mirror is when one of the cogs opens up in front of it and allows the sunlight to go out. So you start spinning the wheel, And every time the cog comes up, there's a gap in the cog. The sunlight goes out and shoots out to the distant mountain, and then from there it goes to the mirror, comes back, and by varying the speed at which the motor was spinning, Fitzhugh could set it up so that when the burst of light was coming back, it would fit into the next cog or the other cog that he had set up. And then by calculating the amount of time precisely that it had taken for that cog in the wheel to move from where it had been up to the position to allow the light to come through, he was able to come up with a fairly accurate calculation of the speed of light. I hope I've explained that properly. If not, Wikipedia awaits. Hippolyte Fitzhugh, and I'm sure they'll do a far better job than I just did of explaining it. But I thought that was a pretty neat discovery, and I thought it deserved recognition here somehow on Solder Smoke. So three cheers for Hippolyte Fitzhugh, and of course also for Ollie Romer. Let's see. All right. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. Here's the warning. Those of you who have had problems with the volume of the gong, you might want to step away from the headphones at this point. 3, 2, 1. Not that bad. Nope. No evidence of overmodulation there. All right. Time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. And this may be one of our last, or maybe the last, Solder Smoke Mailbag from London. They're coming to pack up the stuff here in a little while, in a few days. Might get another show or two out to cover the summer period, but no promises. Anyway, the first message that we got in Solder Smoke Mailbag, let's see here. Got a message, a nice message here from Mark, KA9OOI, near Lowell, Indiana. I've been following the Solder Smoke podcast for quite some time now. I really enjoy the geekiness of the topic. I'm glad there are others in the world who too have the knack. I have had it for some time now, about 45 years. It all started when we went on a vacation down south and I found an old tube radio in a closet at one of the motels we stayed at. Got it working, retuned, and picking up 160-meter AM ham stations, and I was hooked. Mark, you definitely have the knack. Your diagnosis is conclusive here, my friend. There's no doubt about it. Finding an old radio in a motel and retuning it for 160-meter AM? There's no doubt about it. He said he thanks us for the shows and hopes we'll continue in Italy. Asks us to comment on the availability of parts and radio flea markets at the flea markets at the new digs. And he closes with a good triumphant NE602s forever. Indeed, Mark. Thanks for that. We have some nice email from down under that also brings us back to Zen. It says here, hi there, my name is Paul, VK3HN. I am not that active, but do indulge in ham radio via the internet, mostly in my commute and work travel time. I'm based in Melbourne and have been licensed since 1977. On Solder Smoke 63, the reading about the motorcycle mechanic reminded me of Persig's book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, perhaps the most deeply thoughtful book on the craft of making and fixing things ever written. I'm not into motorbikes, but there are many parallels between motorcycle maintenance and home brewing, particularly when things don't work. I'm sure you could find some excellent quotes for future Solder Smokes editions in these pages. You know, and I think I might pick up Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I'm going to be traveling this summer, and I need some bring some reading material, so that might be one of them. Thanks for letting us know about that, Paul. Paul goes on. Also liked the contributed Rockmite 7030 kilohertz audio segment. What amazes me is how much activity there is in the UK. By comparison, 7030 is frequently quiet here in Melbourne, although I can't say I've done a lot of listening lately. I think QRP is at a disadvantage here in VK simply because of the large distances and the low density of active hams. With a few watts on 80 meter CW, you can work VK 3, 1, 2, 5, and 7, but anything over 1,000 kilometers can be a struggle. I used low power rigs in the 70s and 80s and used to call myself hoarse, calling CQ some days. Keep up the good work. Regards, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the observations. Always interesting to hear how things sound from your part of the world. Here's one. Here's a letter I got a real kick out of, and I'm sure you guys will too. I hope Rick Campbell doesn't mind us telling this story. I'm sure he won't. But this comes to us from George, K8VU. It says here, "Dear Bill, I've been meaning to write to tell you about something that happened at 4 Days in May in 2006. Rick Campbell, KK7B, the co-author of Experimental Methods for RF Design, was not scheduled to speak, but he had a number of late developments, so one of the other speakers yielded part of his time to Rick. KK7B prefaced his remarks by telling how his son had become interested in vintage radio and had obtained and fully restored a Drake 2B. He told how one evening he sat down with the 2B and spent a couple of hours tuning around and listening. When he was done, he said to himself, quote, 'What have I done with the last 20 years of my life?' He said the Drake 2B was everything you could want or need in a ham band receiver. What he had spent the last two decades doing was learning how to simulate a Drake 2B in solid state and digital. I thought that you, as a Drake 2B owner, would appreciate that story." Indeed I do. Thanks very much for that, George. I really got a kick out of that, and I'm really, really pleased that somebody is as expert and proficient and such an authority as Rick recognizes that the 2B is such a fine receiver. Now mine is sitting here with me. It's getting ready for the trip to Italy, and well, great. And I'm sure Rick was speaking tongue in cheek when he said, "What have I done with the last 20 years of my life?" Because of course we all know he's made some really tremendous contributions, but nevertheless, the plug for the Drake 2B is much appreciated, and as is your email, George. Thanks for that. I didn't print it out, but I could tell you the story here. Let me see. I don't think I need to print it out. But our biggest fan in Bangalore, Ramakrishnan, who's been a regular correspondent and has been doing some great QRP and homebrew work in India. He's the guy who put up the Wikipedia page for W7ZOI. Ramakrishnan has been plagued on and off by some truly horrendous radio frequency interference at his Bangalore QTH. And he knows that it's been coming from power pole transformers in the neighborhood. He's been unable to get the power company to do anything about it. He had this problem, I guess, 6 or 8 months ago. Wrote to us about it, and we made an announcement about it on Solder Smoke. We asked if anybody had any technical suggestions. At the very least, we asked for people to think good thoughts about Ramakrishnan's RFI problem. We never made any suggestions about the possible need for, clandestine operations or any kind of, overt technical action against the offending transformer. But nevertheless, and I think this is interesting, a few weeks, maybe even days after we discussed this on Solder Smoke, boom went the power transformer. Out went the lights briefly, but then when it was repaired, the RFI was gone, and our friend Ramakrishnan was able to use the ham bands. Well, he was able to use the handbands for a few months until apparently another transformer in the neighborhood started to generate large amounts of RFI, and he was back off the air. We announced this, I think, just last week or the week before in an earlier Solder Smoke episode, and I'm sure none of you will be surprised that just a few days or at most a couple weeks after making that second announcement, the second power transformer also exploded. Ramakrishna said this one blew up in the night, and he could see flames from his window. And then, again, the RFI was gone. So either some Solder Smoke fan out there is taking matters into his own hands, or just it may be just the power of positive thinking, taking action against the offending transformer there in Bangalore. But anyway, Ramakrishnan, thanks for the email letting us know that your RFI problems have been eliminated. If you need any help in the future, we're prepared to to take action again. And good luck with the newly quiet radio atmosphere there in Bangalore. I got a little bit ahead of myself. Usually we don't do mailbag until after band sweep. But my brain must be, I must be a bit disoriented by the impending move. I think I've told you guys, I'm not crazy about moving and all the preparations, and we're deeply into it now. As a matter of fact, as soon as I finish up here, I got to start packing up and organizing and throwing things away, and man, I'll tell you what, the ham shack's ready to go, so that's the main thing, but there's the rest of the house to take care of, and, you know, kids' shoes, things like that. Guess it has to be taken care of. Anyway, we will now, in reverse order, go to this week's band sweep segment. It comes to us from Jason, NT7S. And Jason has sent in a band sweep segment in which he plays for us some 40-meter CW taken during field day in the United States, which was just last weekend, I guess. And, of course, he makes it even more interesting, of course, by letting us listen to field day on 40 meters through a homebrew rig called the Tula Tin that he used as his entry to the 4 Days in May potluck contest out there in Dayton. So, great. And, Jason, thanks for sending that in. With no further ado, we'll now switch to 40 meters CW and Jason's Tula Tin.
Hi, Solder Smoke listeners. This is Jason Mildrum, NT7S, and today I have for you a recording of some early morning field day activity here in Beaverton, Oregon. This recording was made on the 24th of June, 2007, at 0350 local time, which would be 1050 UTC. I made the recording with the Tualatin, which is my homebrew 40-meter superhit transceiver that I designed for the 2007 4 Days in May potluck contest. Now, there isn't any AGC on the rig, so there's a few points where strong signals overload the receiver a bit, although I do use the IF gain control to try to reduce that. I start the band sweep at 7.000 MHz and work my way up to 7.065 MHz approximately. I hope you enjoy the recording. So to Bill and the rest of the group, 7-3.
Thank you.
Well, great. Thanks for that, Jason. And guys, that about wraps it up for this week. And like I say, that might wrap it up for Son or Smoke from London. It may be that our next episode will be from Rome, unless I find a way to record stuff while we're on the road. My wife's laptop will be with us, so there's conceivably a way of doing it, but I doubt it. We're going to be pretty busy. I'll let you know where we're going to be, and if anybody from the Solder Smoke community sees an opportunity for us to get together, shoot me an email. We're going to be traveling in the western part of the United States during the last 2 weeks of July. We're going to start out in San Diego a few days around Mission Bay. Then we're going to be up in the Bay Area for a few days in San Francisco. We'll be in downtown San Francisco. So if anybody is there or is going to be there during the latter part of July, shoot me an email and we'll see if we can get together. And then from San Francisco, we're going out to Colorado. We're going to be in the western slope of the Rockies for a few days in Grand Junction. And then we're going to take the Amtrak train through the mountains to Denver, and we'll be in Denver for just one day. And then by around July 28th, we'll be going back to Washington. Be in Washington for in the Northern Virginia area for about 4 weeks until the very last part of July. There'll be a quick trip up to New York, and then on to Rome. We'll be in Rome by Labor Day. Got to get the kids in school. So that's the travel plans here, guys. And if anybody is going to be in any of those locations, or if you know of any ham radio events in those areas during the time period that I indicated, please shoot me an email, and we'll see if we can get together. Thanks for all the great email, all the expressions of support, all the expressions of support for the big move. I need it. And for now, 7-3s to the big group, Bob from London.